In the wake of the deadly violence in Charlottesville, Virginia, local activists renew their call to take down this city's Confederate monuments. Good Monday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Also, never miss a show. Download the WJCT app and listen anytime. You can also stream us live on Facebook right now. Just ahead, how Jacksonville is reacting to the domestic terror attack over the weekend in Charlottesville, Virginia. What do you think? Give us a call right now at 549-2937. Then later, it's the launch of the new campaign, Connectable Jacks. We'll tell you about it. Plus, some sports. Cole Pepper joins us as the Jags and Gators have a rough weekend. All of that ahead. But first this hour, dozens of demonstrators came out to Memorial Park in Riverside last night for a candlelight vigil. It was in support of the victims who were mowed down in Charlottesville, Virginia, Saturday by a man who crashed his car into a crowd protesting a white supremacist rally. The white supremacists, many of whom were chanting Nazi slogans like Sieg Heil and carrying Confederate flags and Nazi swastikas, were marching in Charlottesville because a statue there commemorating Confederate Army General Robert E. Lee is targeted for removal next month. There was melee in the streets and the death of a 32-year-old woman after a car rammed into a group of counter-protesters. The police have charged a 20-year-old Ohio man described as a Nazi sympathizer and accused him of intentionally weaponizing his vehicle. Now, within 48 hours of the rally and the deadly attack in Charlottesville, Jacksonville activists are again calling for city council to act to remove Confederate symbols and statues here. There's no legislation before the council, but the idea of doing this has been prompting passionate public comment for a couple of years now, when other Confederate symbols started being removed across the South after a white supremacist murdered 9 black churchgoers in Charleston, South Carolina. Here now this morning with their thoughts about the violence in Jacksonville and the local, or violence in Charlottesville, rather, and the push in Jacksonville to take down our Confederate symbols and monuments, we welcome Ben Frazier of the Jacksonville Northside Coalition. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning to you, and of course to your many listeners.
Thanks, Ben, and activist Matt Killen of the local group Take 'Em Down Jacks. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Melissa.
Here's our question to callers. What are your thoughts about the tragedy in Charlottesville, and do you think Jacksonville should follow in Charlottesville's lead and try to take down its symbols of the Confederacy? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, or you can weigh in on Facebook as we stream this show live right now. Ben Frazier, let's begin with you. You represent the Jacksonville Northside Coalition. In the wake of the tragedy in Virginia, you've asked Mayor Lenny Curry to remove Jacksonville's Confederate monuments, in particular the Confederate statue in Heming Park. This is not a new call in Jacksonville, by the way, but it's a renewed call, right, in the wake of this tragedy.
Well, I don't know, quite frankly speaking, as you go over the chronology of the criticism and protest against these Confederate statues, whether we've actually ever said, let's introduce legislation to remove them. I think that's new, and that's what we are asking for as members of the Northside Coalition. We're asking the 19 members of the Jacksonville City Council, who have almost unlimited power with regard to creation of legislation, to introduce legislation, to review it, to see what we might change. Simply put, we're suggesting that we need to change some names and remove some statutes.
And by changing names, you're saying change the names of certain other pieces of infrastructure around town?
We are talking about looking at some names of schools that need to be changed. We're looking at the name change of a park.
Confederate Park?
Confederate Park. We're looking at some bridges that may need some name changes because they hold high in place on a pedestal some men whose histories are clearly racist and not a part of the one Jacksonville philosophy. that is espoused by the current mayoral administration.
All right, we'll go to your calls in a moment on this, 549-2937. Matt Killen, you're with the local group Take 'em Down Jacks, and you're echoing Ben Frazier's call to do this. I'm sure we'll get calls from listeners saying, look, even if some of these historical figures were odious, it's part of the city's history. And that's the argument that, of course, Charlottesville went through before they made the decision to remove the statue of General Lee, which sparked the violence. What's your response to the those that will say you can't remove every vestige of this ugly past in a city like Jacksonville, Florida?
Well, I think that you can try. I think that you should try. You know, Hitler was a part of history. I don't see statues of him everywhere in Germany. So I think that, you know, it's time to recognize what these people actually stood for. They stood for abandonment of the United States of America. They stood for racism. They stood for the enslavement of a human being. There's no place in Jacksonville or America to celebrate that. And as much as it is a part of our history, just like the murdering of millions of indigenous Americans is a part of our history, it's time to recognize that we are no longer trying to go down that road. And we need to change paths, and this is one way to do that.
And this is a conversation many southern cities are having after the massacre at the AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina, 2 years ago. This widespread movement, Ben, calling for symbols of the Confederacy to be removed from places of honor and put in museums.
Yes.
Is that what you would like to see done here?
Certainly. We're not looking to erase history. We just need to put it in the right place. We don't think that it needs to be celebrated or tolerated in public places and public spaces. I was there in Charleston when Reverend Clementa Pinckney was buried. And we saw then, when Dylann Roof waved those flags, that it was no longer a question about the pretense that the flag or that symbol represented a proud Southern heritage. We recognized right away that there was a direct connection between that flag, that symbol, racism, slavery, pain, and shame.
Lots of calls. What do you think about all of this and how the tragedy in Charlottesville is impacting renewed efforts in Jacksonville to recast our Confederate symbols and monuments? They're common across the South. It's 549-2937. Give us a call. Nadia at the Beaches. Hey, Nadia, good morning.
Good morning. I think we are dealing with the past when we should be dealing with the present. Racism is real today more than ever, and Jacksonville knows it because of the murder rate. I wish that we would spend as much time on why people are being murdered and the current racism that's quite clear, rather than worrying about statues that are stoned. Thank you very much.
Nadia, thanks. Matt Killen.
I feel like whenever you can talk about murdering people, and I understand there's no excuse for people murdering each other and not working towards fixing that. However, whenever you have statues and things around you constantly reminding you of your oppressor, it's very important that we work hard to take that down, because otherwise you're murdering that person's future. You're taking it away from them. So we need to recognize that we have a myriad of problems in this city and that we need to work on all of them, and that this is one that is very important.
These statues represent ugly reminders. They are statues which seek to promote white supremacy without recognizing its terrorist realities. We believe that these statues should simply be deemed public nuisances and removed. These statues, I would add, are tools of division and strife. They speak to hatred between the races. They don't speak to any compromise or speak to the diversity which we seek to enrich and think so highly of. They don't speak to our democracy. They speak to hatred and strife and contention. We must move forward. This city must become a city that is too busy to hate. We cannot go forward into the future and the sunlight of a brand new day without first addressing the issues of the past.
And when a city like Charlottesville does exactly what you're saying, Ben, they made a decision after vetting it through the political process. Okay, we're going to take down this Confederate statue. This was the result. What concerns might both of you have about something similarly divisive, ugly, violent happening in Jacksonville?
Good question.
If we go the route other southern cities are going, New Orleans has seen violence. Now Charlottesville has seen violence. When southern cities make this tough decision and they go forward, almost inevitably it seems there's going to be some violence.
Unfortunately, white supremacists are still supporting the symbols of racist hatred. They're still fighting a war that sought to enslave people only because of the color of their skin. It's time to move forward. We've got to move forward. We've got to stop looking back. But we have to admit where we are. In the words of Mitch Landrieu, of the mayor of New Orleans, in his words, I think, are very good. He said, to literally put the Confederacy on a pedestal in our most prominent places of honor is an inaccurate recitation of our full past. It is an affront to our present, and it is a bad prescription for our future. History cannot be changed. It cannot be moved like a statue. But it's time now for change. Let's move forward.
Omar in Riverside. Hey, Omar, thanks for holding. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa and everyone else. So, I mean, first I would like to say that I am in agreement with the removal of, you know, Confederate statues and changing of names of schools. Because as we've said time and time again, it does obviously hold, you know, its original. It's hard to voice, honestly, this morning. I'm a bit kind of overwhelmed after everything that's happened. As a young black person in Jacksonville who's personally, you know, I'm Southern. You've seen Confederate flags. You've seen, you know, that type of hatred from people. But it just seems that as of recent, it's so overwhelmingly prevalent and prominent. You know, over the weekend, you know, I've committed in the Cardinal Center reading public comments on News for Jacks and other places, other news sites on Facebook. It's overwhelming to see the responses from people. You have these everyday people that you work with and that you see and that you're driving on the roads with that have complete disregard for what it means, what the Confederacy stood for, and what it means to someone who is involved in the community, and you don't really think that people think like this anymore. And then you have, you know, the margins are ridiculous. I mean, you know, it's really discouraging, I'd say, is the best word, and it's really disappointing in 2017 that we have so many people who want to write it off as erasing history, when essentially this history is a history of treason and a part of the country that want to secede from the rest of the nation to uphold slavery. And we can call it whatever we want to and say it's not about slavery and it wasn't about that, but we all know the truth. I mean, you know, I really hope that maybe this coming to the light in such a tragic and violent way that you would hope that it would spark more sympathy and more understanding and intelligence from people, as opposed to this defensive and divisive nature that has really shown its head over the last few days. So, I mean, that's kind of where I am today with it, and I appreciate you taking my call, Melissa.
Sure, Omar. Thanks, Omar. Chris in Green Cove Springs. Hey, Chris. Thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Good morning. Having lived over a good part of the world, my concern is, when you try to make it a black and white issue and rewrite history, it can be fraught with a lot of the dangers. I agree with the sentiment that these things should not be in places of prominence, but I've not really ever heard a real good concrete plan about what the alternative is. It's kind of like keep it or leave it. And I don't hear a lot of the true nuances of history. You know, if you talk about Lee, I'm not defending Lee, but the fact is, he went to the same academy as the generals of the North. And you can't just say they're all evil because they weren't. And so I'm great with saying, let's move these statues and things into a context, but I've never heard anybody tell me where that museum is, how that's going to be presented, how is history going to be interpreted. Everybody's very silent on that. It's just, let's just get rid of them. Well, when you get rid of them, then people forget their past, and they tend to create their own past, and they make up their own version of what was without any type of educational context so that the public knows what that actual, real, true history was. And I'll take my response offline.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for that. Matt, I know you want to answer him.
No, that's fine. I'm really glad that he brought up the thing that is most important to me is that it seems like a lot of black and brown kids don't get to hear their history whenever they're in school. It seems left out of school. And so I understand what you're saying. Your concern is that the people in the South may not understand their history, so they'll make their own up. Well, I just want you to know that is actually happening and has been happening in America for
Correct.
A very long time. So I would implore you to look at what the other side has been going through, what the minorities have been going
listen,
through
this
for
is,
all these
listen,
years.
This is a false narrative that you're hearing. I've heard it all before. Southern history is what we're really fighting for. Heritage is what we're really fighting for. No. Well, where were you when they left out all the black history? You see, what we're looking at right now is a revisionist history. I don't see any monuments to the slave ships. I don't see any monuments to the insurrectionists who tried to fight against slavery and enslavement. I don't see any monuments to the lynchings which took place in the South. I don't see any monuments to all the black families who were destroyed and killed by the Knights of the White Camellia and the KKK. Where are all those statues? Now we're talking about you concerned about white history being left out. Hogwash. What you're talking about is a revisionist history that left out everything good that black people did and contributed to the making of America. Now you're talking about including. I even heard some of these guys talking about, well, include some statues of black people. Oh, now you're concerned about statues of black people. Poppycock. Revisionist history reinterprets the historical record. It's been used to rewrite the history of American Confederacy, seeking to condition white folks, the American population, to a prolonged narrative of white supremacy, black subjugation. Let
me jump in. What about his comment, though? What is the plan? If we remove the Heming Park statue, if we change the name of Confederate Park, if we change the names of really most of the downtown bridges, you're saying, are named after men that had an unsavory past, what's the plan, Ben? Where would there be a museum? Would you want to see a museum created in Jacksonville? You know, there's a museum dedicated to the Holocaust. And I think a lot of this disconnect stems from the fact that after the Civil War, America and particularly the South were never forced to have the reckoning that Germany had after the Holocaust or that South Africa had with its Truth and Reconciliation Commission at the end of apartheid. There was no reckoning. And so this wound has festered for over 100 years.
Well, yes, and I agree with that to a certain extent. But there's something else I think that we should review. The Civil War started in 1861, ended in 65. 12-year period of Reconstruction to 1877. These statutes didn't come up until the Jim Crow era, when they were putting their foot on the backs of black
people. That's true, and we are getting tweets about that because you both called for, you both mentioned the names of schools being changed. You know, of course, after a long fight, we did change the name of Jacksonville's Forest. Nathan Bedford Forrest High School. And here are some tweets coming in about all of this history. From Brian, the 1885 state constitution imposed a poll tax to hurt black voting rights. The statue in Heming Park went up in 1898. Doug tweets the show. The statues were put up by Confederate veterans as a form of propaganda to paint their cause as just. From Kingsley, we should hear the sheriff and the mayor guarantee domestic terrorists will not be allowed to march in Jacksonville.
Amen.
From Rob, ask your guests to list the specific bridges and places they want to rename. Let's talk about that in a minute, but first let's take a couple more calls. Robert on the north side. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, you know, my question is, you know, what did we think was going to happen in our nation when we voted in a black man, a wonderful, talented black man? What did we think that white people were going to do? Everyone is freaked out. It's 8 years. They put up with it. This is not going to go away easily at all. Thanks. You guys have a good day.
Thanks, Robert. Let's try Jay along the Trout River. Hi, Jay. Good morning.
Hello?
Hi, Jay. Go ahead.
Hello, hello.
Go ahead, Jay.
This is Jay, or Jay. Hello?
Yes, please go ahead.
Yes. What we are forgetting here is that the people who led the Confederacy and the Confederacy itself were traitors to the United States of America. They tried to break up the Union. And they failed. And as the gentleman stated earlier, revisionist history tried to turn them into heroes. When I walk past a statue of any of those guys, the hairs on the back of my neck stand up, and I'll let y'all respond.
All right. Thank you for that, Jay. And here's another email from Ricardo. This is an opportunity for people concerned with Southern history to distance themselves from neo-Nazis and white supremacists. To be clear, the people marching in Charlottesville, Virginia, by the way, many of them were not from the South, but they were screaming Sieg Heil. They were carrying Confederate flags, Nazi swastikas.
Mm. My goodness.
Yeah. You know, the guy that rammed his car was living in Ohio. Some of the people carrying the torches were young men from Centerville, Ohio.
Wow.
That's where I grew up, Dayton, Ohio.
Right.
So I think it's, to be clear, this isn't, well, certainly this is a big issue in the South.
It's not
a only a Southern issue.
Yeah.
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 Well, the reality is that we call it the United States of America. Fact of the matter is, sometimes it doesn't seem that we're too united. It sometimes seems that some people are ready to fight this war all over again. That's unfortunate. It's a lost cause. Mm-hmm. Those shots were fired at Fort Sumter by Confederate soldiers, which started the war. The war is over now. So the question I ask rhetorically is, are we ready to engage and have a serious conversation about the relationship between the races? Are we prepared to move forward? Are we prepared to give everybody a fair shot, to give black and people of color their piece of the economic pie? Are we ready to become a city that is too busy to hate, or do we want to stay stuck in the past in strife and contention and keep fighting one another and calling each other names? I say it's time to change. It's time for love. It's time to love, folks. Stop the hate.
And let's take a few more calls as we talk about Jacksonville's reaction to the violence in Charlottesville, Virginia, Saturday. Ed in Orange Park. Hello, Ed.
Yes, great show as always. It's totally understandable, the point being made by your guest there. I guess some concern people have is how far are we going to go? Are we going to remove George Washington since he had slaves? I mean, how far is this going to go? And the problem is that our young people in particular have very little knowledge of history at all. You can go to Universal right now. I think it's Universal. They have business students, whatever they call it now. The Indiana Jones show, and you're going to see Indiana Jones fighting black Nazis in uniform. There were no black Nazis. Don't blame the black for the Nazis now. But people are seeing shows like this. They're mixing everything up. They have no knowledge of history. And you end up with situations where the young people are totally confused. Maybe education would be a wonderful thing.
Matt Killen.
Yeah, there are several political leaders in our history, including Andrew Jackson, that owned slaves, and or, you know, Andrew Jackson went a step further and committed genocide on millions of people, introducing the Trail of Tears to, you know, Florida and the United States is forever going to be a stain on our country. I don't agree with, you know, necessarily that George Washington goes into that area of racism. I think that you need to look at
He owned slaves? Thomas Jefferson owned slaves?
They did, yeah.
So since this hideous
It's prevalent. Nightmare is what was the birth
of our nation,
right.
You know, was by people who were genocidal murderers and slave owners.
Right. Yeah.
And so that, yeah. You know, the founding fathers of our country owned slaves.
Right.
So then what about the argument that are we going to remove on them, you know, statues to the founding fathers?
I guess it's something to talk about.
I think that it goes beyond simply statues. Again, what we need to do is to face our own reality. And our own reality is that you can't expect to make a problem better until you face it. Okay, so America was racist. Shake hands with that, guys. Because mm-hmm. there's some people who still don't want to admit that.
Yeah, water's wet.
You know, come on.
Okay, let's go to Alan in Riverside now. Alan, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
No problem. Yeah, I just had a question. You just kind of touched on it again with Andrew Jackson, but you know, you mentioned, you know, the murdering of millions of indigenous Native Americans and also, you know, changing names around the city. Well, Jacksonville itself is named after Andrew Jackson, who has a pretty rough history, as we just spoke about. So are you also lobbying to...
I'm all for a change. Let me be first to jump right on.
He stole it from me.
Let me be clear. You think we should change the name of the city?
Why not?
I would be happy with that.
Why not? Jackson not only did the Trail of Tears, where 4,000 people were killed. This guy sent out orders after killing the Indian men. He sent out orders and told them, go ahead. Now kill the women and the children. That's who your city is named after. A mass murderer.
So,
now, if you're okay with that.
And that's true. And that's all true. If this is take him down, Jack's going to go further. How would you go about doing something like that? Changing the name of a city it's been known as this name for however many years.
That's fine.
How are you going to do it?
So if Jacksonville is, you know, already named Jacksonville, how many Jacksons do you know out there that have done things that were much better than what Andrew Jackson is? Samuel L. Jackson has done better than what Andrew Jackson has done. I would go for Helen Hunt Jackson. Helen Hunt Jackson, as many don't know, is a very predominant woman in Indigenous history. She
So keep the name, but after a different Jackson?
After a different Jackson.
Well, my suggestion is that we start with the statues. Let's take that Southern soldier, that Confederate soldier standing to the south at Hemings Plaza, a public park. Let's take him down. Let's start there.
Where does Take Him Down Jax go from here?
We take down the statues. We rename the names. Right now we're petitioning.
Will you be petitioning city council?
They already are. So, yeah, that's already happening.
And any response yet from the mayor's office, city council, on these efforts?
No, nothing yet. However, again, there is a call for legislation to remove some of these statues and change some park names and or school names. We need to review it. It's not going to happen quickly. There are passionate views on both sides. We need to review it, but we need to be prepared to change. We must move from being a little sleepy southern town where we are afraid to engage each other with the realities of the relationship between the races. We must strive to become a city that is too busy to hate. We need to be talking about making money around here.
He's Ben Frazier. Like yeah, I think that is one thing that we can all agree on. Ben Frazier with the Jacksonville Northside Coalition, Matt Killen of Take 'em Down Jacks. Gentlemen, thanks for joining the show.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us here.
Much more still ahead later. A rough weekend in local sports for both the Jags and the Gators. We'll have a look at that. But up next, the launch of Connectable Jacks. Find out what it's all about right after this.
On the next Fresh Air, a talk with poet Molly McCulley Brown about poetry, faith, and disability. Her new collection of poems was inspired by the notorious Virginia State Colony, known for its practice of eugenics, where persons of varying disabilities were committed. Brown grew up in the shadow of the colony and has cerebral palsy. Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Florida played a major role in the success of Elvis Presley. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll talk with Bob Keeling about his latest book, Elvis Ignited, The Rise of an Icon in Florida. We'll discuss an 18th century trading company that did business with Native Americans in Florida, and talk about new research on Zora Neale Hurston. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
Calling all educators. WJCT and Community First Credit Union are proud to present the 5th Annual Teach Conference, an event created by teachers to engage, empower, and inspire. Saturday, September 16th at the Hyatt Regency Hotel. Tickets are $30. Tickets purchased for the 2016 event will be honored. Share ideas with colleagues. Learn new ways to engage students and empower yourself to inspire others. Bring a friend and get your tickets now. WJCT.org/teach.
Take a drive with us into the blues horizon, the best in classic and modern blues, as part of WJCT's After Hours. Tonight at 11 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world, your music.
Welcome back. Well, it's a new campaign designed to create more meaningful connections within Northeast Florida with people who have intellectual and developmental differences, or IDDs. It's called Connectable, and it all started because the funder of this idea, Dolores Barr Weaver, noticed that people on the First Coast often focus on the disabilities of people with an IDD rather than what they bring to the community. Susan Edelman is VP of Communications at the Community Foundation. She's here with more about Connectable. Good morning.
Good morning.
Also with us, Susan Bell, a local mom whose daughter, Megan, has Down syndrome and is featured in the Connectable campaign. Hey, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Okay, so this is something that began at the impetus of Mrs. Weaver.
Absolutely.
What is Connectable?
So Connectable is, as you say, it's an awareness campaign that has to do with connecting the folks in the greater community with people with IDDs. And so Mrs. Weaver, who has had a long history of supporting nonprofits who work with people with IDDs, was disturbed by the fact that even though she saw these wonderful things happening within the community, in the wider community, she just kept hearing the word disability. So she wanted to help elevate the conversation. She brought in the Community Foundation because she does a lot of her giving through the Community Foundation, as you know. So the Community Foundation instituted a research project to look at it, and the result is this wonderful year-long campaign where we hope to create these connections.
And how will you go about doing that? And by the way, it's focusing on differences that people have rather than disabilities.
Correct.
You say people with intellectual or developmental differences.
That's right. So we know that IDD is a very common term in that community, and it has to do with intellectual and developmental disabilities. That's an insurance term. It's a medical diagnosis, and those are important. But what we want to say is that these are differences. We all have differences, but there are an awful lot of things that we all share and have alike, and so we're trying to create the connections so that people can see the value and the things that the people with IDDs bring to our community, hard work, good family relationships, all the things that we want in our fellow citizens.
Now, Susan Bell, your daughter Megan is featured in the campaign. Tell me about Megan.
Well, I don't think we have enough time. We were blessed to have Megan. She was born with Down syndrome, and our expectations for her every year increased because we thought, what's this little child going to be able to do? And as she accomplished one thing, we thought, what's the next hurdle going to be? Megan currently works at the Chamber of Commerce. Mm-hmm. She loves her job there. We were very fortunate when the ARC Jacksonville called us to see if Megan would be interested in going for an interview there. And at the time, she was working at Publix. And I said, sure, you know. So how many are going for the interview? And said, well, right now, we're just sending Megan. And they hired her on the spot. She loves Daniel Davis. He is
the head of the chamber.
The head of the Chamber of Commerce. Probably one of the best bosses there is. He took the chance of hiring her, and she has lived up to his expectations. She has a job coach that comes in and helps with her. And I think that's one of the most important things for people to understand, that they do have job coaches that will come in and support them, give them, nurture them. They just want to be out in the community and work. Megan can do anything she sets her mind to do.
And that's the message of this campaign, that there are a lot of other Megan people like Megan out there.
Absolutely. And what we, part of the thing we've done, we worked with Daigle Creative. We have some video vignettes that are on our ConnectableJacks.com site. And you can go and see Megan working at the chamber and the things that she's doing. And there are other folks with IDDs that we have captured their stories so that people can see how you might get to know someone with an ID, you might consider employing someone with an IDD, you might volunteer, or just become more educated. What we really want people to do is take the pledge to become more connected, and you can do that on ConnectableJacks.com.
And you'll learn there that people with IDDs encompass a variety of diagnoses, everything from autism spectrum disorder to Down syndrome, many other things. An estimated 6.5 million Americans have an IDD, that's and about 1 to 3% of the global population, hundreds of millions of people, including so many thousands in Jacksonville. And, you know, while people can have problems with their intellectual functioning and their behaviors, the whole idea behind this is that if you see a person with an IDD, they want the same things as everyone else. They want to contribute to the community. And so what are some other ways then, as you launch Connectable Jacks, that people can help further this campaign and be part of this?
Well, obviously, we would like them to go to ConnectableJacks.com and check out the website where you can find all kinds of resources, including a couple of dozen nonprofit agencies in Jacksonville that work with folks with IDDs. So you can learn their places on there to volunteer, their fact sheets. If you're interested in becoming an employer, there's some really down-to-earth fact sheets about what it takes, what you need to consider, all the things that come into play. We obviously would like you to follow the campaign on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at ConnectableJacks. Use the hashtag #IAmConnectable, but first take the pledge. Once you take the pledge to be connectable, then all the rest of it will fall into place.
Very nice. And Susan, your daughter landed her job at the chamber. Maybe you'll have some advice for other parents that they want their child to get a good job too.
And I think that's the hardest thing, is trying to find the job. Is this, they want to work. They want to be out there in the community. And I think the community needs to be more aware that they're approachable. Don't be afraid to come up and talk to I still call her my child. You know, she's 26 years old, but she's still my child. She is so vibrant, and they want to interact. And when you just talk with them, they're the same as you and I. You know, it's they want to be part of the community. She lives on her own now at the ARC Village. It's a wonderful place to volunteer and just to be able to connect with. But I think it's getting the word out there. They want to work. They really want to be out and involved in the community, and they want to work.
And they want to connect, so hence the name Connectable. It's ConnectableJacks.com, helping people with IDDs connect with this community. Just go to the website, take the pledge, and learn more. And if you know someone with an IDD, plug them into this campaign. Susan Edelman is VP of Communications at the Community Foundation. Local mom Susan Bell here with us too. Ladies, thanks so much for sharing this, and keep us posted.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Culpepper's up next. We'll be right back.
North Korea has been one of America's toughest foreign policy challenges for decades. Some diplomats call it the land of lousy options. Tensions are running higher with the Trump administration's war of words. What happens next? And what options do we have to avoid war, nuclear or otherwise? We'll open the phones and answer your questions on North Korea next time on 1A.
Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT.
Hello, I'm Doug Hansard, and I listen to the Florida Times Union On Demand as read by WJCT Radio Reading Service volunteers. The sound quality is excellent. This is a great asset for people like me, sightless and on the go. The Florida Times Union daily on the radio reading website at wjct.org/radio reading. Take advantage of it, and while you're there, register as a listener.
The most important thing Miss Macy taught me, though, was how to walk a runway, how to tilt my pelvis and tuck in my stomach and keep my chin up. And she encouraged me to enter every beauty contest that came to the state of Alabama, and I did, and some of them I won, like Miss Talladega 500 Raceway.
Join us next time for the Moth Radio Hour, True Stories Told Live, from the Public Radio Exchange, PRX.org.
Saturdays at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
If a hurricane threatens our state, Florida's public radio stations have joined forces to ensure you receive important storm information. No matter where you are, you can stay informed on the radio, online, on social media, and on the mobile app Florida Storms. Timely weather information is always available from WJCT. The Florida Public Radio Emergency Network is supported by Citizens Property Insurance, online at citizensfla.com.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, Sunday was a rough day for both the Jaguars and the Gators.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper, wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
Culpepper's got to look back at the weekend sports news and notes. Hey, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Yeah, let's start with the Jaguars. Yesterday, as they practiced at the Flex Field, the indoor practice facility
right,
for the first time.
It's open, yes.
Finally, it's been open, and they haven't wanted to use it for a number of reasons, one of which is that Doug Marrone just wants to make training camp tough on the players. But after the weekend's activities and the game against New England and so forth, he decided, all right, one day, let's get inside, a little bit of a break from the weather. I can tell you, very nice in there, a lot of light, and plenty of room for all 90 players on the roster to work. Offense was on one side of the field, defense was on the other. But some things were happening. First and foremost, we get to practice, we realize that Leonard Fournette is not out there working with the team.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever that might be in terms of why that would be, we didn't know at the moment. Turns out Fournette has a foot injury.
Oh.
And after saying that the NFL was easy, maybe not the right thing
to
say.
That probably wasn't the best thing to say.
Might have jinxed it. This is what Doug Marrone had to say about Fournette's injury after practice.
Leonard has a foot injury, and we're just being real cautious with it. If it puts anything in jeopardy for a longer deal, because we'll get him back, then I probably would hold him. I think it's been something that's just been kind of growing.
All right, so as sort of a nagging thing is how we described it. We'll keep a close eye on things, of course. Fournette, one of the centerpieces of the Jaguars' offensive plans for the future. We'll see how it all plays out. Also, during the course of practice, Chris Ivory, one of the other two co-starters at running back, went out with an injury. We'll be following that one as well. And then we look up and we see that Blake Bortles isn't working with the first team. Instead, it's Chad Henne at quarterback with the first team. This was not a situation that it was a benching or anything like that, despite the fact that Bortles had thrown a couple of interceptions earlier in practice. Marrone said afterwards that he just wanted to keep the pitch count down on Bortles' arm, didn't want to have a ton of throws on his arm, give him a little bit of a break. The Jaguars will be practicing against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers this week before they play the Buccaneers on Thursday. But Henne did look pretty good, by the way.
Really?
I'll just point that out. Not a quarterback controversy, but something worth noting. And then during practice, toward the end, Marquise Lee went down with an injury. They brought out an air cast, didn't put it on the leg, did put him on a golf cart and take him off the field. We're not sure about the extent of the injury, but it did look to be the most serious of all the injuries that happened in camp yesterday. So injuries all at once with offensive players, something to keep an eye on for the Jaguars this week.
And the NFL isn't easy.
No, it is not, as it turns out.
Yeah, as it turns out, maybe not so much. Okay, so so from professional football to the Gators, what's going on?
Well, the Gators have suspended 7 players for their opener against Michigan. Not an easy opponent to start with, and one of those players is Antonio Callaway, the Gators' best offensive weapon, the wide receiver and punt returner who has been the most dangerous player that the Gators have had on the field for the last, really, 2 years. He'll miss the opener. It is not going to make it easy for the Gators against the Michigan team that's already pretty good and lining up to be one of the top teams in the country this year. They're going to have to find a way to fill in the gaps. Not all of the players are that level of player, like Callaway, that have been suspended, but 7 players who, many of whom were going to be counted on as either starters or reserve roles, are not going to play against Michigan.
Okay. Now, we need to talk about the Armada, and after you talk about the team, I've got a little goodie for our listeners.
Oh, very nice.
Some tickets to give away.
Well, a 2-2 draw over the weekend at North Carolina for the Armada included Tony Taylor scoring a goal. Taylor, a Bishop Kenny product who went to JU, also had played in MLS with the NYCFC and had been playing professionally in Portugal, making his second appearance for the Armada and scores a goal in his second game.
Really?
Big moment for him. Scored just 3 minutes into the contest. Also
right.
Set up the second goal when he drew a penalty in the area, set up a penalty kick. And so certainly the local talent making an impact on the Armada. He was one of the new acquisitions after Robert
That's
Palmer
exciting.
Bought the team. Really
yeah.
was. And he's happy to be home, by the way. He said he was happy to be back in Jacksonville. The Armada will play Wednesday against Puerto Rico FC and then Sunday against Miami at UNF's Hodges Stadium.
And if you've never been to an Armada game, well, now's your chance because we have 2 sets of 2 tickets for the Armada game coming up Wednesday. VIP passes to the pregame party starting at 5 p.m. in parking lot 18 and kickoff against Puerto Rico at 7 p.m. These are provided by 927 Events. If you want these tickets right now, email Paul at 927events.com. He'll pick some winners at random.
Sounds great.
Yeah, how about that?
Look forward to seeing everybody out there. I'll be out there calling the games, of course.
Of course. Yeah, you're the voice and the face of the Armada, so they get to meet you too, maybe. So how about that? Okay, so the Shrimp and the Sun, the Atlantic Beach Suns.
Yeah, the Shrimp won. They'll have a final game of a homestand tonight, and then they're not back home for another week. It has certainly been an advantage for the Jumbo Shrimp to be playing at the baseball grounds. They've been a much better team at home than away, and they're going to be looking forward to getting one more game in tonight. The Atlantic Beach Suns, talk about going away. They went to Branson, Missouri to play in the Cal Ripken League World Series,
what?
Won the national championship last week, and then lost in the world championship game to Japan.
Aww.
But great job by the Atlantic Beach Suns going out there and bringing back a trophy for Jacksonville. Congratulations. Not only did they get the win and be on the big stage, but also certainly build memories for a lifetime.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Always has such good sports news from Cole. Follow Cole on Twitter, at Cole Pepper. And football season's coming around. You want to listen to the Sam and Cole podcast for some football news. Always popular.
There's going to be a lot to talk about for sure with the Jaguars and with college football as well. I'll also point out just one last note here, Melissa, that Florida State and Alabama, who opened the season against one another, the hype has begun. They're now calling it the greatest opener ever.
Really?
Because there's never been a number one against number two to open up a season. There's never been number one against number three. There have a couple times been number one against number four, but this will be number one against number three in the polls when Florida State and Alabama begin their season in September.
Pretty exciting. All right, that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers today. Our producer is Kevin Merchart. Michelle Corum runs our board during the program, and the show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Download the WJCT app, listen to us there anytime or on iTunes. Next on 1A, Charlottesville and the White Supremacists. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day. We'll be right back.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.